Factopia. Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi, udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Ugeavisen Ingeniøren, med støtte fra Innovation Center Danmark, Messecenter Herning og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia. Vi ved alle sammen, at datacentre de bruger rigtig meget energi, men ikke desto mindre så lægger vi en masse af vores filer hos datacentre. Det kan være vores fotos, det kan være vores musik, det kan være vores video, det kan være utrolig mange ting, som industrien eller banker eller andre virksomheder bruger. Men hvad nu hvis man kunne gøre datacentre bæredygtige, hvis man faktisk lige frem kunne gøre dem til en del af naturen? Tænk en gang, hvis vi kunne lære vores data i planter. Det lyder måske lidt utopisk, men hvis man nu beskæftiger sig med det, man kalder for kritisk designtænkning, hvor man prøver at kritisere teknologien gennem at designe andre løsninger på de problemer, som teknologien skal løse. Tænk en gang, hvis man kunne tage sine data, for eksempel alle sine fotos gennem de sidste 10 år, og så lave dem om til biologisk kode til DNA, og så på en måde skrive den DNA ud og putte den ind i planter og gemme alle sine fotos, hele familiealbummet, i potteplanten i vindueskarmen. Det lyder måske lidt skørt, men projektet Grow Your Own Data Garden, dyrk din egen datahave, er netop i gang med at forske i, hvordan man kan gøre det. Og lige for tiden, der kan du se deres kunstinstallation hos CATCH i Helsingør. Det står for Center for Art and Technology, Center for Kunst og Teknologi. Her på Tektopias redaktion tænkte vi, okay, data ind i potteplanten, og så skal den bare vandes, og så skal vi aldrig nogensinde mere betale en masse penge til Dropbox, eller rende rundt og have tænkt på et USB-stik, der bliver væk. Vi skal bare huske at vande potteplanterne, og det er så øvrigt også en god investering i CO2-regnskabet. Så min kollega Rosa Marie Frank, hun pakkede kufferten og tog en tur til Helsingør for at finde ud af, hvordan man laver sin egen datahave.
So I'm Cyrus Clark. I'm originally from London. I've been living in Denmark and various other European countries over the past few years. I have a background and training actually initially in economics and then kind of went into digital technologies for quite a long time, was running innovation projects at L'Oreal in Paris, and then came to Copenhagen to go to CIID, which is the Interaction Design School. Met Monica there, and since then have been working on various projects around especially futures, imagining the types of futures we might want to create rather than the ones we might just accept. And I've been working a lot with different technologies, especially machine learning, blockchain, and now in particular biotechnology. And that's why I'm very interested in working with natural systems and through Grow Your Own Cloud, which we'll talk about more. That's really where my passion lies.
My name is Monika Seifert. I am coming from Poland. I live in Warsaw right now. I've actually been living in Copenhagen in Denmark for the last 4 years, which was an incredible journey for me. I have a background in arts and interaction design. And similarly to Cyrus, I am also working quite a lot in trying to understand how we can build different futures and how we can head towards them and trying to sort of ask all these important ethical questions around them. And lately I've been exploring quite a lot the space and the environment of biotechnology and what is the role of biotechnology in sort of crafting those futures.
And we're sitting here because together with a scientist from the US called Jeff Nivala, then you're the group called Grow Your Own Cloud.
Indeed.
And from this group you made this project that we've just been presented to today. Can you tell me what the project is about?
So Grow Your Own Cloud started with myself and Monica in 2017 when we were both in Denmark. And at the beginning, we were very interested in exploring how we could store data in a different way than the conventional computational way of storing data, especially because we found a link between the data storage industry, especially cloud data storage, which is becoming this huge industry, which is by far the largest industry in the world right now. The link between that and its exponential growth and the exponential growth of carbon emissions. And we found this to be really peculiar because no one was really talking about it. So we came up with this term called data warming, and we wanted to try and reform, let's say, the data industry, or at least point towards how it could change by providing some kind of alternative. And funnily enough, we found an alternative by looking to nature.
Yes, we've been sort of exploring what could, how can we find different and new solutions for the data storage that we're using right now, and sort of looked into biology for different answers, and started exploring the subject of DNA data storage. So what DNA data storage is essentially is you're trying to encode the digital data into a synthetic DNA. So our work was really trying to crack that, and also trying to push it a bit further and see if we can introduce that DNA into other organisms for storage, and what are the properties what is it that is going to happen, and what is it that this organism is going to give us back from that whole process, let's say.
And how did you do this? How does this work, basically?
Yeah, so this is an area which, when we spoke to scientists, when we had the idea, because obviously we're coming more from a kind of arts and design background, and even our design approach is very out there. It's very speculative. It's not very much rooted in a practical reality. So the idea for us to store data in plants was rather more symbolic, or it was not to have a particularly instrumental value, let's say. We were not trying to replace hard drives or replace the cloud industry with storing data in plants. It was not the point. It was a kind of symbolic gesture as to where we could go if we start to think about working with biology and working with DNA data storage in particular. So we picked plants because they really symbolized a lot of values that we liked, and we feel that other people would connect with, and it would be the right medium to convey this message, basically. So working with the scientists, there's basically a quite broad spectrum of genetic modification techniques you can use to edit the genes of the plants. And essentially, when you're trying to get DNA data, or data, sorry, into the plants, you need to modify the genes. You need to go through one of these processes because the plant has to accept that this data is coming in.
Okay.
So essentially what we start by doing is taking some data and creating some synthetic DNA. So that's liquid form, basically a liquid form of data, which is a very, very, very small droplet. I can't really explain how small it is because it's, you know, very, very, very,
very
minuscule.
Very small.
You cannot really even see it or interact with it.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing that would be interacted with machines or very sophisticated technology in a lab. And then you take these molecules of data and you insert it into some kind of other organism. So this could be, for example, a bacteria. And this bacteria will then take on the data, because the bacteria wants to take on other pieces of information, wants to take on other interesting things, other interesting pieces of DNA. The bacteria absorbs this data. So this data is now housed within the bacteria. And then you take the bacteria and you introduce it to the plant. And of course, it has to be the right bacteria and the right plant, and you can't do this with everything. But through that process, you can go from having a JPEG on your computer, having it in liquid form, introducing it into a bacteria. So it's living in the bacteria now. You could stop there. I mean, it's still interesting there. But for us, we wanted to get it to the plant. So you take the bacteria, introduce it to the plant in a couple of different ways. One way is to use a syringe, not with a needle, but literally taking the droplet from the bacteria and introducing it to the plant on the leaves. And we call that a foliage injection. The second one is where you literally create a large bath of bacteria, or agrobacterium to be precise, and you dip the plant in this. And this is called a floral dip. And this is a very powerful way to actually ensure that data would be in the organism for a long period of time and into next generations as well. And then the third way which we could do this is through what's called a gene gun. And this is actually quite an old device, but it uses gold particles, exactly, to try and break through the cell membranes and allow the DNA to penetrate when you need to. We didn't actually use that, but we use the first two techniques to insert DNA into plants.
So when the plant has the data in it, is it then certified as or categorized as a gene-modified plant?
Yes, plant. Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
It's a GMO. So when you say it's a GMO plant, now everyone is thinking, oh, GMO, well, this is scary. Nowhere near as scary as anything that you might think about. I mean, firstly, the genetic modification is very temporary. So the data that goes onto the plant lasts a few days.
Okay, and then, what happens?
Well, because the data is not useful, particularly to the plant, the DNA, the gene of the plant will say, well, this is not useful to me. I don't want to take this on. And so it rejects it. So it lasts there for a few days, but then it disappears.
That's something that we have to probably research a bit more. I think there are techniques that, for example, when you would penetrate the plant cell with the golden particles, I think you can embed it for longer. But that's like a science that needs a little bit of, marinating in order to understand it better. Yeah.
But you also, so you managed to put some data into plants.
Yes.
And you did this for real in the States, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Can you tell me about what you did there? Because the thing is that you're not allowed to do these things in the EU, right? Mm-hmm. So what we're actually looking at here in this room where we're sitting right now is what you call it, like a...
Simulation.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the States, we decided to embed different text into synthetic DNA, into a liquid form. So the story is that we were invited to South by Southwest, which is a festival that happens every year in Austin. It started as a very alternative rock festival, music festival, I suppose, which was bringing quite a lot of experimental thinking and grown into as many things in America right now. Grown into being an extremely corporate environment that promotes big tech companies and is sponsored by big tech companies like Facebook, Google, Amazon, Apple, etc. And it's being this hub every year where people are coming and of course the music is still very strong and they're bringing a lot of beautiful artists, but they're also having this whole like tech section that is being very present in that festival. And that's important to stretch because I think some of the decisions we made when we were building this were also tailored towards that kind of environment that we're going to be exhibiting it in. So for example, one of the things that we decided to do was to encode a specific message into the plants that was really strongly pointing at the data warming aspect of how we're storing our data right now, and really like putting a lot of these like strong statements in the form of a text into DNA that then was introduced to a plant through the techniques that Cyrus just listed. That whole process happened in Seattle in the University of Washington by Jeff Nivala. And then the plants were shipped to Austin, where they were supposed to be exhibited. Unfortunately, the festival got cancelled 4 days before.
It was because of Corona?
Yeah. It's because of the Corona, which is a big shame, of course. But the other shame is that, here's when we're coming to your point that you just raised at the beginning. In the US, you have very loose restrictions around how the GMOs that you can exhibit. So that's why in here... Unfortunately, we cannot exhibit like the real plants with the real data inside.
Ja, en velvalgt kliché, man kunne fyre af her, det er, at træerne ikke vokser ind i himlen. Det er måske ikke helt så nemt at smide sine data over i en plante. Men i virkeligheden så handler det her projekt også om at kritisere den måde, som teknologibranchen den fungerer på. Projektet skulle have været både på Roskilde Festivalen og på South by Southwest, den store teknologikonference i Texas i USA, men begge dele blev aflyst på grund af corona. Det skal dog ikke forhindre de to folk bag projektet i at forklare, hvad det egentlig var, de havde tænkt sig.
What were the strong messages that you were planning on showing to the executives?
It was rather simple things, honestly, because they were supposed to be slogans that would come from Grow Your Own Cloud. Like it was positioning Grow Your Own Cloud as a kind of because it was South by Southwest, we were positioning Grow Your Own Cloud as a real company, let's say, that would be almost like a Google of data storage, but from biology, with nature. But we also had, as a company, because we're a very 21st century company, have a kind of activistic angle to it. So things like stop data warming would be the first message that would be displayed in the space. And mostly things around how do we reconnect with nature? How do we see, like, nature is a technology? Things like that would be displayed in the space, or nature is the ultimate technology even. And we designed and wrote those slogans as a provocation to the intended audience, because the intended audience at South by Southwest, for the art section anyway, is not a place where anyone can go. It's a place where only people with a certain level of a badge can go. And those tend to be execs from big tech companies, decision makers of all descriptions. And so we wanted to create a piece and create messages that would stay in their minds. I mean, even if they disagree with it, they would probably go home and think about, like, what is data warming? Or, like, is our computers really technology? Are they really the most interesting technology we have? When if you put, like, a fruit and an iPhone side by side, I mean, the fruit is by far the more interesting technology fundamentally than an iPhone. So it was for this. This is the kind of direction that we're trying to head towards, and these are the kinds of reflections we're trying to inspire in people through our work. And that's why, that's where, for me anyway, art becomes a really powerful conduit for these kinds of interventions, because it can enter into spaces where those messages can enter into spaces where it wouldn't necessarily arrive. Mm. This is not in an art gallery. This is admittedly within an art space, but it's somehow interesting to kind of infiltrate it and carry those messages there.
Are you also interested in giving new value to plants by putting data into them?
I don't think the intention from our side is to put new values on the plant. It's sort of a situation where we're trying to, in a playful way, invite people to start noticing them, at least, or like try and take care of them in a more special way, and try to reform our relationship with the plants when we are really ultimately owning them and doing a lot of the with them. What the moment when they are sort of like being a host for our valuable things, suddenly we're looking at them as like hosts and we are their guests, and we have to take care of them for them to be nice to us. So that's like a kind of like a metaphor that we've been working with, and sort of like a, let's say, methodology. I don't know if you can call it, but methodology of like trying to access this sort of like feelings in people's minds, rather than trying to put a different value on the plant itself, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Maybe you're trying to say, and what I take from what you say is basically, or the way I'm thinking anyway right now, is around. So maybe to contextualize it, myself and Monica are doing a residency now with Ginkgo Bioworks, which is a very large biotechnology company, which is receiving a lot of venture capital to kind of grow. And I suppose the way venture capital is viewing biotechnology is it's viewing it like early computational technology, almost early, like 70s early, which started with very, very large things, but it was small and niche and not many applications, especially for everyday people, not at all. It was only when there started to be this arrival of personal computing and operating systems and interaction design to create kind of usable interfaces that can allow everyone to kind of use these systems, and the price goes down. All of these things have to happen together. There's a huge number of innovations that have to come together for that to end up in an iPhone, right? Then if you think about this stream of how that all came together, it's rather incredible. And biotechnology is in the mind of the venture capitalist and into the mind of many people, probably very similar. It's very early stage right now. There are applications, but they're relatively niche, like within certain industries. But for the average person, I mean, maybe if I think deeper, I will think of a biotechnology application that I do use, because it would be a bit abstract. But clearly and ostensibly there's not one I can really think of, and I'm not sure anyone could really point to one that they use unless they have maybe diabetes or something like that. So what I guess is interesting right now for us is that the computational industry and computing industry, and even the work we have done as interaction designers, right, the training we get is to think through these metaphors like cloud, but also everything that's in your phone, everything that's on your computer is based on a metaphor that a designer or some kind of thinker came up with, or a computer engineer came up with, to make this thing make sense to humans. And the sense now has kind of become more pervasive. So as you say, people think of the cloud as benign, which I don't know if that's really true. Maybe they do. They also have information that the cloud isn't benign, but that's a different story. That's a question of like, at what point does information become knowledge and so on? That's a different thing. We don't talk about that. But all of these metaphors have become pervasive. They've become things which we take for granted, as Monica was saying, and they have become part of our everyday lives to the extent that we use them in everyday speech. So we say things that come from computation and come from computing language in the way that we talk, in both at home or in the workplace. And that's what's very interesting for us right now to work on biology and biotechnology, because it feels like those paradigms are kind of up for grabs. It feels like they are important to define within biotechnology, but also to define within a wider context, and also to apply back to computing and question everything that we've kind of taken for granted in the past 30 years. Because it seems, I mean, until I started working with biology and biotechnology, I was probably one of these technology-driven people who was thinking a lot about where blockchain is heading, or artificial intelligence is the most interesting thing. And I definitely don't think those things anymore, because those things are based on, to me, rather simple, almost plain ways of viewing the world when you compare it to how biology creates systems and ecosystems, which is far more rich.
I think for me, the most beautiful thing is to try and build a world where nature is taking its course and humans are letting go. And so that's the biggest inspiration for me. You have to just deal with uncertainty and deal with the fact that it's just things are going to happen and biology will decide, not you. The way we're building current technologies, we're in charge. We're very hygienic about all the legislations, about protocols, about how things are running, that we are not letting go any of it. And I think that could be and is problematic in the long run. There's not that much diversity that's happening in technology because of that. And we see multiple examples on machine learning being trained on certain race and then giving errors where it needs to go through another. So I think this is what it's interesting to me when we talk about this intersection between biology and technology, or thinking in general. Like, it just invites a lot of diversity, invites a lot of error, it mutates, and you just have to let it be. And that's beautiful. So I think that's kind of like the biggest inspiration I'm sort of getting from biology right now, around the diversity, I suppose.
And just to finish off now, I know you just got a residency to work on a new project. Can you just very shortly tell a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Currently, we got an amazing opportunity to work with Ginkgo Bioworks, which is a, as they call, organism-based company, right? Something like that, in Boston. And we're invited to be creative residents in there for 3 months, which is an incredible opportunity because we have access to super interesting scientists that are dealing with biology on all sorts of levels. And we're inviting there to work on the subject of skin, and particularly looking at how skin, and by skin we don't only mean skin of humans, but the skin could become an interface for data exchange between different species.
And what's the project called that you're working on? Are you going to be working on?
Yeah, we're working on a project that's called Interspecies Gossip. So we're looking into this data as a gossip and how it spreads in the systems around us. How can we capture it? How can we step in? Do they want us there, etc.?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting that they invite people like us, because, as I said, this is a very, very large biotechnology company, positioning itself, you know, as a biotech company of the next wave of huge technology. It's already had a lot of investment, and they're inviting artists and creatives to come in there and challenge them. And this is not something that's very traditional, but clearly very valuable. And it's very interesting to have this exchange between us, non-experts of biology, but having, you know, interesting thoughts whenever possible and making these different connections and having a diverse background ourselves, and then meeting these scientists. But also within the company, there are people who are thinking, I suppose, more like us. So the exchanges are extremely rich, and it feels like that collaboration together can take that area, that biotechnology, in a different direction potentially than computing went down. Because now we see, well, computing started with very utopian dreams. Where has it ended up? Not in a very utopian place, in a very dystopian place indeed. Whereas biology and biotech probably starts from a more dystopian place right now in people's minds. But if we are able to collaborate in this way, and people like us are able to collaborate and be immersed in those fields, I have the feeling it can go in a very different direction. It can actually head towards something more utopian, as we are obviously interested in.
Ja, det var altså Rosa Marie Frank, der havde været en tur i Helsingør på CATCH, Center for Art and Technology, hvor man i den her tid kan se en prototype på den her datahave. I denne her uge har vi også fået et podkort fra Ingeniørens podcast Transformator.
Nu siger forskerne, at de har fundet et bevis på liv på Venus. Det lyder som et lidt kedeligt liv, synes vi, sådan i en svovlsyresky over en 400 grader varm overflade. Men lad os give det en chance, og må ikke snart vi får sendt en sonde op. De siger, at metroen var en fremtidssikring af København, men nu skal den graves op igen, fordi man nok kom til at underdimensionere den. Og så siger de så meget, de der konsulenter, men det er ikke altid, der er substans i det. I ugens Transformator skal vi tale om liv på Venus, metro, og så skal vi spille Bullshit Bingo. Altså i denne uges podcast fra Transformator.
Og i virkeligheden så er der jo andre podcaster ude end Transformator og Techtopia. Det har du sikkert nok opdaget. En af dem, du kunne måske lytte til, det er en, der hedder Rosas Reality Show, som faktisk er lavet af Rosa Marie Frank, som var oppe i Helsingør og kigge på datahaver. Og den linker jeg til på techtopia.dk, hvor du også kan finde links til andre ting, vi har snakket om her i podcasten. Du kan skrive til mig på henrik@techtopia.dk. Du kan følge os på Twitter på @techtopia.dk. Og så kan du deltage i en meget livlig diskussion om teknologi i vores Facebook-gruppe. Den hedder Techtopia Backstage. Personligt funderer jeg over en lidt underlig tanke om, hvad der egentlig ville ske, hvis man flyttede sine data over i et salathoved, som man så bagefter spiste. Så havde man jo på en eller anden måde spist sine egne fotos. Og hvad så? Jeg tror, det er noget af det, man ikke skal tænke så meget over. På genhør i næste uge. Techtopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi, udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Ugeavisen Ingeniøren, med støtte fra Innovation Center Danmark, Messecenter Herning og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Techtopia. Techtopia.